morning all, welcome to the team car and this week's Fendrian cast. It's the post Tour de France review show. Feels like a long time ago already, doesn't it? Kind of feel a bit let down by the end. The race had built quite nicely, bubbling along, quite close, with Froome and Rigoberto Uran, and with Warren Bardet, Roman Bardet. Always get those two mixed up. And as we last spoke, the Tour was kind of hurtling into the Alps. And not a lot really happened, did it? Barguil won a stage again. But it seemed to be, if everything was about the tough day over the Quad Affair and the Galibier and the Telegraph and then building to the summit finish on the Issoire, it didn't really kind of work out that way, did it? It was, the gaps, time gaps were still, you know, kind of small enough, but the time trial wasn't long enough, if that makes any sort of sense. The time trial probably needed to be 10, 12Ks further to give, you know, that little bit of belief to Rigoberto Uran that he could probably, you know, maybe eat into Froome's advantage. But Froome, you know, kind of fair play to the guy. As he said, you know, like in the Pyrenees, he struggled, but he was still trying to, you know, build up his form. And he was trying to come to a peak while the others were trying to hold a peak. And you saw how Fabio Aru fell away. And you wonder whether, you know, having gone so hard to try and win the Dauphiné, rather, whether Richie Porte would have also been able to hold his form. I mean, we'll never know, of course, over the 3 weeks. But Froome seemed to be on an upward peak, and I think once the riders kind of felt that, then from their perspective, you know, the race was over. And the time trial itself, while it was, you know, pretty good-looking circuit and, you know, nice climb, the supposed 60 odd thousand people that had taken up the offer of tickets to watch the start and finish in Marseille's football ground was actually only about 15,000-20,000 on the day. So, you know, the public had already decided that the race was over, and it just felt quite anticlimactic, really. The crowd could barely be bothered to boo Chris Froome. Although I think tactically he made sure he didn't quite catch Bardet in the time trial, which was very good of him. So, yeah, frustrating end to what actually was a pretty exciting Tour de France in the main. You look at the first week, okay, so the sprints were all won by Kittel, but they're all pretty dramatic, pretty exciting. There was a couple of days where the break went, you know, into the last 5Ks, or in Bodnar's case, the last few hundred metres before getting caught. So, you know, there was plenty of entertainment. The mountains came. Okay, they deprived us of a couple of contenders. But actually, the you know, it was great. And it built up quite nicely. If we could have had maybe, you know, like Bardet distancing Froome on the Issoire, even if he didn't go, you know, even if he didn't have enough advantage to win the race, at least, you know, you could have said, yeah, that was a great Tour. And that's the difference between a good Tour, I think, and a great Tour. A great Tour, the mountains, you know, bite, you know, every single mountain bites. Whereas I think the Pyrenees even probably were outdone by the Vosges and the Jura. And, you know, it's not often that you go to a Tour de France and the Alps is, you know, by some considerable distance, not the best mountain range, you know, in the Tour. So very strange, subdued kind of end. Now, whether Sky had got, you know, Kwiatkowski and some others who'd got Nieve and Landa in a position where the pace was such that Bardet couldn't attack, maybe. Uran never looked like attacking. I think that Cannondale were always happy to try and keep him on the podium, which kind of led to that little stalemate that we found. Who knows? You know, a lot's come out since about the fact that Froome was technically and tactically undercooked going into the race to try and get better as the last week went on and make the last week tougher. And, of course, that he's now wanting to go on and do the Vuelta and try and win that. But, yeah, you know, underwhelming. At least the Champs-Élysées stage was exciting. Yeah, good to see a real proper long-distance sprint from Dylan Groenewegen to win. We like Lotto Jumbo on this show, so for them to get a couple of stage wins with Roglic and Groenewegen was exciting, and you know, ended the tour in good spirits. Going to do a bit of local news as well. For any local person who is lucky enough to subscribe to the Actually Gazette Facebook page, you will have seen yet another post from a motorist complaining about riders using the A15 rather than the branch-covered, gravel-strewn cycle path that exists. I've tried the cycle path a few times. It's just not really a cycle path. It's just a slightly wider footpath, and it's really, really difficult to ride with the stones. And it's actually probably as dangerous as using the road. Now, this post accrued sort of a couple of hundred comments, a lot of which were from angry motorists using the road tax argument for a change, and a lot of which were, you know, angry cyclists biting back. And I sat and had quite a long think about this before committing to even open my trap about it. But I think it's a difficult one, really, because for those of us in Yaxley that have been there, you know, kind of decades of such, I can remember, and I think I've said it on this programme before, that when I was a boy, you could ride at the age of sort of 7, 8 or 9, you could ride down the home road to the woods, have a picnic, ride back, and you'd never see a car. Unfortunately, the bare facts of life are such that Yaxley is now a lot bigger. It is more urban than rural than it has ever been, and obviously it will never go back to being rural now, and we can argue whether that's progress or not. The roads are busier, there's more cars. As a result of cycling being more popular, there's more bikes. All of this contrives, you know, to go into, and obviously Great Haddon and various thousands of other houses and things are coming. And what this all does is throw everyone together into a sort of war battle for the road, the limited and underfunded and poor quality roads that we have. And it's just, you know, okay, fine. You know, I don't necessarily agree with the motorist standpoint. I don't sometimes agree with the overly aggressive, you know, standpoint of some cyclists who kind of, you know, we were here first. It's irrelevant who was here. Everyone's got to use the same stretch of tarmac that exists. So, you know, everyone either gets on with it or rides and drives together, or we're going to be continually in this cycle of just people arguing for the sake of arguing on Facebook, which, you know, many people who know me know I'm not a massive fan of Facebook anyway. But I don't know. It just seems like a whole lot of nonsense for something that's not necessarily that big a deal. If a car is slowed down for 5-10 seconds, in the grand scheme of someone's life, is that a massive deal? No. I think it's not the cyclist. In that case, it's not the cyclists that are causing the person to be angry. They're already angry, and the cyclist slowing them down, or the horse slowing them down. You know, these are the sort of people, I think, who yell at traffic lights turning red, when that's part of life as well. So, you know, I think some people, you'll never win the debate and win the argument, but I just think it's a sad reflection. It's a sad reflection on the village of Yaxley itself, that, you know, people can't cohabitate. And also the fact that Yaxley was a beautiful little rural countryside village, and now it's a suburb of Peterborough, and that is just, it's heart soul destroying and quite heartbreaking. Anyway, we'll finish on that. So, episode 71 in the can. Thank you very much for listening. And we will be back next week with some stuff. Maybe an Arctic Race of Norway preview. And in the meantime, keep sharing, keep listening, and enjoy the show. And thanks for listening.